This is an ESO and Dude Letter production. Welcome to Mission Briefing.
Hey guys, welcome to Mission Briefing. If you guys listen to the Myopia main feed as well, you'll know that Myopia is dropping to every other week. Unless there's five Thursdays in a month, then there'll be three episodes. And Mission Briefing is now once a month. There's some big changes coming. But I hope you guys will stick with us as we trek on, because this week, Bond goes back under the sea.
We have slain many dragons. We are the Polyhedron Society. We have braved the depths of Gallowspire. We are the Polyhedron Society. We have maintained the masquerade. We are the Polyhedron Society. We shot first. We are the Polyhedron Society. And we aim to misbehave because we are the Polyhedron Society. The Polyhedron Society proudly presents its actual play RPG podcast. Tune in each week as we immerse you in one of many stories through the art of collective storytelling and role-playing games. The Polyhedron Society has decades of gaming experience, and we use that experience to create rich characters and lavish stories.
Welcome to Mission Briefing. This week, we did For Your Eyes Only from 1981. I guess one of Roger Moore's... This is his fourth one? Fourth outing as Roger Moore.
He's getting good at it.
Yeah, he's getting finally, very good at being Roger Moore.
He's getting a little old for Bond, but he's very good at Roger Moore. This is, additionally, the first one after a Winter Olympics that we will get back to, because apparently the whole second act was based on the fact that we just had a Winter Games, so it was very popular. But before we get too far into this movie, we should go around the panel and talk about who's here. So, starting with you.
I'm Matt.
Thanks.
Yep. And,
Hello, this is Daniel, and I'm now sponsoring a woman's figure skater for the 2018 Winter Olympics.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
Jeremy.
And?
John.
Excellent. So before we get to the plot, like always, we should talk a little bit about this cold open, which is one of the weirdest ones in the Bond movie.
It's hilarious.
Well, there was that whole thing behind it where they just lost that lawsuit to Kevin McClory.
Yeah.
So it was just a giant screw you to him.
Yeah, so we've talked a little bit about this before, but Kevin McClory was a buddy of Ian Fleming, and they had hammered out the plot for what would become the movie Thunderball, which was supposed to be the first Bond movie. And they had created this character, and M and Q were like in the books, but Spectre was created for this specifically, and so was Blofeld.
Mm-hmm.
They had pitched this movie to whoever, Pinewood, MGM, United Artists, the Broccoli's, all them, okay. Then Fleming tried to undercut the whole thing by getting Thunderball published as a book, taking away the credit rights from McClory, which went into a 10-year legal battle, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. So they couldn't do Thunderball first. They ended up doing Dr. No. This is when they finally lost the lawsuit in 1981. McClory gets the film rights. That's why in 83, when Octopussy comes out, we get Never Say Never Again, which is Thunderball remade.
Stay tuned for Never Say Never Again, right?
Which I believe is going to be next, because we're going to do it before Octopussy.
Oh, phew.
Yeah. But in the cold open, as a big up yours to McClory, they kill Blofeld in the most horrific way possible.
Who's never named and his face is never seen.
You see the cat.
That's exactly. Yeah. We only know it's him because he's stroking the white cat.
Well, and wheelchair bound, but
And bald.
Why is he wheelchair bound?
With that huge.
He always sits down, so you know, you just assume that he can't stand. I mean,
and he's wearing a neck brace and is bald. I mean, it's closest, I guess, to Telly Savalas's one from Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
But yeah. Hence why first, before he even does that, he visits his wife's grave.
Yes, very much on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which we never see. This is the only acknowledgement of another Bond actor, really.
Yeah.
Except for the next one, because Tim Dalton gets to say, it was never this difficult for the other guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've done a cut. Well,
I thought that was George Lazenby that did that.
Maybe it was Lazenby.
I thought it was.
He had luck with his inner... Yeah, well. Okay, so what happens is Bond is visiting the grave of his wife, Teresa Bond, Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a monk comes out and goes, they're sending you in a helicopter. It's an emergency. We have the Universal Exports helicopter land. And then he notices that the priest is crossing himself, which is worrisome because I assume he's Episcopalian. And they just don't generally do that.
Do Anglicans do that?
I don't think they do.
Looking at you, John.
They can.
I mean, I can. Doesn't really mean much coming from me.
It burns! It burns! Why?
It's not like the Catholics have a monopoly on that.
Oh, that's funny. And on the grave, it says the last thing he said is he was cradling her.
That was such a sad scene, too. Oh,
it's
man.
An interesting scene to
that
open
hit the
with.
Feels.
It is.
Well, not this one. I meant the one where she dies.
Under
Majesty. Yeah, well, yeah, that's, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you realize, like, because Lazenby is such a wooden actor through most of that movie, but in the end, he's like, he develops acting in the last 10 minutes.
And emotion?
That's the character arc. It wasn't James Bond. It was George Lazenby.
Much how like how Roger Moore is Roger Mooring in, this,
exactly.
In all of his movies.
He Roger Moored very well in this.
Yes, he did.
Oh, we to go somehow even earlier in the movie, and we're talking about the first 45 seconds, but in the gun barrel sequence, we notice his tuxedo has bell bottoms. And so when he turns to pivot and holds his elbow, his flares flare out at the last minute before it goes down the gun barrel.
You just keep turning.
Wouldn't the wind catch those when you're trying to aim?
You say that. One of the guys' skiing jackets with like the furry lining had lapels out to their elbows. He could have literally taken off like the Flying Nun style in one of those. Anyway, so the helicopter takes off. Blofeld, using his control panel, kills the pilot.
Control panel / motorized wheelchair. It's a single unit.
Yeah.
Stephen Hawking look at this thing and go, that is ostentatious.
Thank you, Daniel. But using the power of eardrums and electrification, he zaps the pilot and then takes over by remote control, trying to kill Bond in the most ostentatious flying display I've ever seen.
Now, in Bond movies, helicopter pilots are really disposable. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like they're not that common in real life, but henchmen that are helicopter pilots are a very
doesn't
short
Blofeld even say that's one of my more useless people?
But consistently, the helicopter pilots just die.
Why would you send your most useless person to pick up James Bond?
Because he was going to die.
Why not just have the pilot, I don't know, jump out like they did in the plane in the last one?
They should have just had a mannequin in there. That would have been so awesome.
The mannequin would have been good.
And then Bond's like makes a quip, and the guy doesn't laugh, and he's like, something's wrong. Taps him on the
shoulder. He's not responding to my witty brand of humor.
My dry, dry humor. We've talked about how they sometimes sort of acknowledge that Bond changes, sometimes they don't already. But, like, it would be great if that was the cold open where Roger Moore left. And, like, he gets in the helicopter just explodes. And then Tim Dalton just kind of trickles out. Hello, I'm the new guy. You know, with Pierce Brosnan, that's kind of what they do. You just see him from behind the whole time and he runs, he jumps off a dam. Like,
Are you suggesting that James Bond starts having regeneration scenes in their movies?
I like when they kind of acknowledge it. I think it's weird. I mean, because let's be honest, this is for fun. This podcast, we don't believe that there's a person, although there's a person. So I like that these are screenwriting jokes, right? They're self-referential, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
But like sometimes it gets a little bit close to being kind of like, oh, people keep dying. We keep replacing QM Moneypenny. Mm-hmm. This point, the Moneypenny scene is kind of sad
because it's the same actress.
I like this Moneypenny scene.
Well, it worked.
It worked. They're not even flirting anymore. Like, would you like to bone me, James? I think she says, well, you could get inside this.
No. You have to go inside the meeting.
Yeah, you should go inside, James.
Something.
Moving on.
There wasn't really much of a grunt when she said
it. I don't remember
a
grunt.
No.
Maybe I'm just adding things. Lois Maxwell. Yeah, she's her name. We really do need to do Operation Kid Brother or Operation 007.
Watched it earlier today. Thanks.
Isn't it great?
Really?
Well, her character name is Maxwell. Miss Maxwell. She's Miss Maxwell.
Really?
And it's Commander M.
Who was the villain in that? It was some beefy Italian dude?
No, who played Blofeld in... Well, not on Her Majesty's. And Diamonds Are Forever.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so, I mean, they really got everyone. Anyway, so we should move on. Blofeld is trying to kill them. We never see his face this time.
Yep.
But Bond is able to reroute the remote control thing by climbing outside of the helicopter. And again, This helicopter is going nuts. It's like getting within inches of the ground and weaving around through warehouses, which again, you kind of have to do stunts back then.
You think if he'd wanted to kill Bond, though, he would have made him put on the headphones or whatever those were?
Or he could have just crashed a helicopter.
He was enjoying himself.
Yeah, he was. He was toying with Bond.
He was actually like playing Goat Simulator.
Bond climbs literally on the outside of the helicopter on the running board, comes back in the pilot's side, pulls the pilot out, disconnects the remote control, and then takes over the helicopter, at which point he picks up Blofeld on the runner and drops him into
a smokestack.
I love how there are scenes there where Blofeld's like flailing and banging on the window going, I'll buy you a delicatessen.
What was that? There must be some story behind that line.
Apparently it's something like, that's what gangsters said.
Oh, thank God. Someone else knows what this is.
Okay.
And was it Broccoli or one of the producers thought that just sounded cool?
Yeah, apparently it's a mafia thing. Like when you're being...
I guess that makes sense. They do like their sandwiches.
Well, right. Sandwiches, and it's like... Yeah. So it's like a way of saying like... He sleeps with the fish. It's like, I'll get you a delicate. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's clearly what Saltzman thought or Broccoli thought. Yeah. Like,
okay.
He wanted to direct a mafia film so bad, and he keeps getting stuck with these Bond movies.
For Blofeld to make this offhand, like,
it made no sense.
It was really weird.
I thought it was like some director's joke, like some joke from one of them, like a writer.
If
it
like referred back to another movie, that would have been interesting, but. Like, if he had said something like, I'll get you an underground lair or something like that, that might have been more interesting.
I have a volcano lair somewhere. It would have been great. And of course, this always makes me think of Archer now, which references everything. But it reminded me of that scene in Bob's Burgers. I just imagined Bond there with him flipping burgers like, oh, yes, this is quite nice.
Linda, what's the burger of the day today?
Well, doesn't Bond, like, work in a food truck or something in one of the movies?
Well, we're Roger almost Moore? To when he works for a fair.
It
could be what
that's
I'm
the next
of.
One. That's Octopussy.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that now James Bond in charge of the Belcher family.
James Bond will return at Longhorn Steakhouse. Although he was a vegetarian pacifist, too, wasn't he? I know he's a pacifist. That's why he doesn't like much of the action scenes. Though this might be where Bond gets the most headshots ever.
I'm trying to remember when I saw him eat. Like Dr. No, I know he's drinking all the time.
Well, like he ordered prawns in this one, but he doesn't eat.
Yeah, I didn't see him eating.
Why would we waste screen time watching him chew?
Oh my God, how great would that be? He just takes up like a hoagie. Like I love when Bond tries, because that's something they don't really try with this Bond at all, like him to be folksy or, you know, whatever. But he just picks up a giant sandwich. It's just like, excuse me.
Well, how can you get more folksy than...
Well, it has to have, like, Subway. It.
7-Up.
He goes
sponsored.
To America and gets, like, a chili dog, and he's trying to eat it without getting any on his suit, so he's, like, out here. Who am I?
How can you get more folksy than that Louisiana sheriff in Live and Let Die?
And when he shows up in the next movie, and he's like, oh, no, it's him. And he goes, you're that secret agent! Oh, boy! Guy's from New York, for God's sake. And he's doing a southern accent like he came out of some hillbilly nightmare.
I just have to say I'm so thankful Pepper does not show up again in this movie.
Yeah.
Do you think that was a character they thought...
I like watching them figure skaters train. Oh, lordy.
That was really grating, actually. Wow, that was surprising.
That was horrible.
Almost as bad as the real thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going
for. It was worse. I could listen to the real thing.
So from here,
I traumatized you thoroughly for the day, Matt.
It was upsetting.
So from here, we should talk about the theme song. No, with the theme song.
Oh, theme song. We're
and
not
then
there
we'll
yet,
let John get the plot. So Matt, this one I think you like the most of all of us. So tell me a little bit.
Yeah.
About it.
Well, this song, I just think it's a nice song. I remembered it really well. This movie I liked as a kid a lot. So I guess everything I remembered really fondly, but. This song I know word for word.
Who sang this?
You know what I don't
Sheena
know?
Sheena Easton.
Thank you. So what did it's other than the fact that they say For Your Eyes Only about 4 million times.
A few times.
This is the only one I remember where the except for possibly the most recent one, right? Because in Spectre, it's the lead singer we actually see.
Yep.
But she is actually singing like this is a music video.
Yes.
Was this before or after MTV got launched?
It's probably right at the beginning.
Same year.
All right. Well, and see, like, that's something I was thinking about the other day when I was editing an episode. It's amazing that we don't think about Bond in the same way anymore. But at the time, there weren't music videos. Like, they weren't really a thing that they showed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So this is... the best music video you could get. You got a million eyes on you right away. And so when Paul McCartney did it with Wings, hell, that was incredible. This is right on that cusp. And like, to Jeremy's point, by the time we get to the Pierce Brosnan era, MTV is already dying. As far as the mid-90s,
I'm curious
video.
What the Octopussy one is, because I don't remember it at all. The theme song is completely not memorable.
Octopussy.
Why do I want to say Rita Coolidge did it?
Ooh. It might be.
Really?
Does that sound right to anyone else?
I don't know.
Right. I don't remember.
I think I've only seen it once, again, and I don't remember the theme song in the slightest.
Well, you might be pleasantly surprised by Octopussy. I doubt it.
I remember it being so bad.
It says a lot that when you're like 8 years old and watching these movies, you recognize that it's a bad movie.
Yeah. Well, because there are the ones that I loved that were not very good, but if I hated one so much. Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the Louisiana Sheriff?
Oh, I loved Live and Let Die when I was a kid, too. I mean...
Holy crap. Octopussy, the lyrics were written by Tim Rice.
Really?
It was sung by Rita Coolidge, All Time High.
Wow. Huh. Good memory.
Well
done.
Yeah, I mean, it got 36 on the top 100.
Huh. Maybe it's not too bad.
Yeah. Anyway. It didn't get nominated
that's
for
song.
An Oscar.
That's not the movie. That's the song.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Right.
Just to be clear.
Okay. So the visuals for this one,
it was only weird because we see her singing it.
Yeah.
Like, and she's naked singing it. You know, you just have the director going, yeah, that arm should be tastefully across your bosoms. Because they keep panning back and you just see her arm and you're just like...
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the point?
Well, but you also, like, usually these women are in silhouette. So the fact that we see her face already is weird. But then she's also still naked?
Do you think it's she wanted to be actually shown in this one?
Would she have had the clout? I don't know.
But at the same time...
Madonna tried to do it, didn't she? Well, she starred in the movie.
Yeah. Well, and then what's her name?
Yes.
What was the one, you would know this, from Quantum of Solace, it had Jack White and...
And Alicia Keys.
Alicia Keys. Because I think you see Jack White and Alicia Keys in the music video.
I knew at this time they were doing like separate music videos because I remember Garbage's music video for The World Is Not Enough, which was significantly freakier than the opening that they had.
Well, and Tina Turner's for GoldenEye was something else.
Oh, I hate that video.
But the song sequence is great.
The song is great. Yeah. Well, but the video was just nonsensical.
Well, and the way it fits into the thing feels right. This is clearly a transition. And it, I mean, again, Jeremy brought it up. This might be an MTV kind of transition because this one suffers from the 80s more than most. Like, considering it's 81, they disco'd the Bond theme throughout this. So this is John Barry.
At a time when disco was dead.
It was fun. I mean.
Apparently John Barry did not do the soundtrack on this one.
So who is this? Monty Hall?
Because apparently he had tax problems and wasn't allowed in England at the time.
At this point, wasn't Roger Moore technically a citizen of Switzerland or something?
Probably,
A lot of these Brits do like the exiled for tax reasons.
The Rolling Stones said that. Why not, John Barry?
Yeah. England's number one export is rich people, I guess. Bond movies and rich people. Not the royals.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
First scene mission?
Yeah, no, please. Give us our plot.
Yeah.
Similar to forthcoming movies, we have a British spy ship.
Yep.
Somewhere in the Mediterranean. I believe. We find out later that it's off the coast of Albania.
Yep.
It's just monitoring things, normal, routine, whatever.
And a Bond movie being in Albania proves that they ran out of locations.
And it's a fishing ship. And so, like, as their cover. And so there are actual fishermen on top pulling in nets with fish. And one of the nets has a...
Mine.
No, again, not to derail you off of the plot, which you're great at doing.
Immediately.
Yeah, I know. The mine scene of them pulling in the mine to the boat is hilarious.
They keep pulling it in.
It's like the guy is like, don't pull it, there's a mine. And the guy on the winch is like, doing what? I don't know.
And then he runs away.
Yeah, it's like, no, just turn the winch off.
Yeah, turn the winch off. If it's got a reverse, use that.
Yeah. And the mine is like the most... like generically big spiky
straight
naval
out of
mine.
Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, you could argue it's a derelict World War II mine.
Yes,
I imagine.
But that would make no sense because wouldn't somebody have planted it in order to sink it? Or is this
presumably
all just random?
Well, that would be interesting if they ever played that into the plot.
They don't explain a bunch.
No,
I think it's just an accident.
Okay. I was under the assumption that whoever the villain was had planted it there.
No. Because we saw in Christatos' warehouse he had those mines.
Okay. Yeah.
So maybe it was planted. It's never made explicitly clear.
Granted, his warehouse was in Albania, so maybe it's like protecting his warehouse or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
How do you pronounce his name again? Christatos.
Christatos.
Christatos. Okay.
Yeah.
It's the new meal at Taco Bell.
I was trying to put that together.
Anyway, the ship sinks, and they're not able to destroy the radio transmitter thing, the ATAC.
ATAC.
I don't know what it stands for.
But Bond does.
They try to destroy it. It's got a suicide button on it, but they can't destroy it before they all drown.
It's trying to kill itself?
They try to destroy
it. No, self-destruct.
It self-destructs, yeah.
And I don't want to live on this world anymore.
Why was I programmed to feel pain?
I'm not gonna let you get through this. It doesn't blow up. It all sinks. Britain's freaked out because this thing has the codes to all their ships. So
in the traditional Bond way, British freak out is, oh no, the ship has sunk.
Call in Bond. And so whoever has this thing could listen to communiques, they could make communiques, they could
do stuff with subs.
Well, we've already seen in The Spy Who Loved Me that they tricked two subs into nuking each other. So.
Yeah. Like they say, Bond says that someone could countermand orders that is given to a sub.
Yeah, so I think it's communications.
And the minister says you could order the sub to attack England. And they would just do it, apparently.
All this talk of subs and Taco Bell, I'm hungry all of a sudden.
This episode brought to you by Snack Food.
You can eat when we're done recording. Which at this rate might take 2 or 3
We've
days.
Done all these podcasts all in a row. Why can't
Please
we go?
Please let us out, Nick. It's been 3 days.
You'll learn, Bond, and you'll
so
like it.
So where are you in the plot?
The boat just sank.
Boat just sank?
Yeah, and so M... Oh, no.
Not M.
We go to the, I guess a few days later, where the Havelocks are on some sort of research vessel.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And their daughter, Melina?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
She comes in a boat plane.
Mm-hmm.
They greet each other and all that.
Sky plane?
You mean seaplane?
Seaplane.
Sky plane.
We'll get the name eventually.
She comes in, apparently long lost, whatever. The plane leaves, does a U-turn, only this time it's got a machine gun attached, and it kills the parents.
Now, are we for sure that it's a different plane?
No, it's the same plane.
And the same guy who flew her out there, but for some reason decided not to kill her as
well.
Because
he's a friendly Cuban hitman that's like chatting her up on the way there.
I guess. I don't know.
Also owns the shortest of shorts.
Well, yeah. We'll get to
We'll get there.
So many short shorts.
So you want to do like overarching and then we'll go back into...
Just go ahead. Tell us the plot.
So he kills the Havelocks. That sets Melina on a revenge mission to kill this guy who's a hitman and then the guys who hired him and all that, which leads her into a collision course with Bond. And somewhere along the line, the Russians get involved. And we've got smugglers trying to get the ATAC and sell it to the highest bidder.
Yep. Excellent. Race for the ATAC.
So that's the 10,000 foot view.
No, it's good. I this movie is interesting because without Spectre, KGB is a good, interesting villain, but they are bystanders. This isn't their mission. It's Christatos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it right. I actually liked in the beginning. I don't think he wants to like create an international incident by directly going and retrieving this thing.
No,
so.
And it's really like John said, it's a race.
And the British minister said we can't do an official operation because it's in like Albanian waters or Greek waters or whatever. Now, why they can't just do an unofficial mission?
Hey, we don't want to piss off Albania,
which I guess is what the Havelocks were doing.
Yeah, throw
but
stuff
why
at
have
us.
Two marine biologists when you could have like a whole fleet?
Well, but he's a researcher already there. I mean, that's a good cover.
True, they didn't actually know where it went down.
Yeah,
so they needed to find it before they mount a rescue mission. But Bond takes his time, kind of getting out there.
We'll get to Bond taking his time because, as I recall, in Octopussy, like. He starts putting on makeup as there's a bomb ticking down on a nuke. Like, Roger Moore is not going to be rushed into anything, gentlemen. Like, you can't expect him to.
The old leg is acting up again, good sirs.
I mean, he is old. Okay.
Was this his fourth or fifth one?
This is his fourth. He's 54 when this is being filmed. 29 years older than BB.
Ugh. Oh boy.
To be fair, he's rejecting BB.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Melina, who's maybe 5 years older than her, he's fine with.
Oddly enough, Melina is about the same age as BB, actress-wise.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She just looks older. Oh, wow. That's rough.
Now, when I was a kid, I saw this really bad Disney movie that BB was in. It was like some sort of horror film.
Did you look it up?
I think it was called something like Watcher in the Woods, I think.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah, it was bad.
Her patron was Watcher in the Woods, I think.
Yeah. Many I'm not entirely over. Sure why we had her character.
Well, was I just
comic recommend. Relief?
Well, no, I it was to well, maybe
it was
comic
to titillate
relief.
The audience.
It was
with
introducing the East
jailbait.
German dude.
Yeah.
And she, we had to have her kind of like consistently.
And for whatever reason, she's with Christados.
Yeah,
because well, he's her sponsor.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
an Olympic.
Well,
gymnast?
She rejects him.
Which skater. Skater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, Daniel, you're not wrong.
Is that what it was?
1980, The Watcher in the Woods, starring Bette Davis.
Wow.
She was in that movie?
And Carol Baker.
I just remembered BB.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there she is.
Yeah. There you go. Oh,
there you go.
Anyway.
Oh, good memory.
The year before this, she was in a Disney movie for kids, and now she's a scantily clad figure skater.
I think she was in there so we could get all of the cool Winter Olympic things.
Mm. I think she was in there really just to titillate the audience.
Well, but, again.
Mission accomplished.
Hey.
For her eyes.
Yeah,
or for
she's
his
supposed
eyes.
To be how many teenage years old?
15 or so.
Yeah, it's a little creepy.
They play her young.
Yeah.
Well, I was
yeah.
just reading an article today about how they're airlifting, like, 500,000 condoms to the Olympic Village.
Yeah, they
well,
like
that, that's
do they
Olympics.
Have to be airlifted?
I'm not sure if they were airlifted, but they were getting. Yeah,
you don't want anything.
I feel like you could
ground.
Move those in like a truck.
It's just like in a giant condom wrapper.
A big condom full of smaller condoms.
They inflate one as a dirigible and they fly
a Russian
in.
Condom.
Okay, we're good.
Anyway, yeah.
No, we can keep doing condom jokes.
Yeah.
Trojan man. I don't even know where we are. What happened?
So we got a.
Oh, we're going to the hitman.
Yeah, we're going to the Cuban hitman.
Right.
Yeah.
In that pool scene.
In a pool party.
As you said, the Playboy Cuban hitman.
Oh, man. Like, so I picture, like, at least in the Daniel Craig ones, the hitmen are, like, studying, right? They're always, they're in their, you know, the hotel room where they're planning stuff.
They're professional sociopaths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're planning. This guy is having a party scene. Like, it is, he is in the shortest powder blue.
Of course.
Everything is powder blue.
Can we just call it Bond blue?
Bond blue. He's in that Bond blue that the Broccoli's and everyone loves on that entire staff.
Also available in Terry Cloth.
Mm, girl. Mm-hmm. On Etsy. If anyone wants to make me a romper, I am taller than Sean Connery, so good luck. But
I can
yeah.
make you a onesie.
Little feeties?
Yeah.
It require all the terry cloth.
That would be so hot. Like temperature-wise.
Oh,
so
temperature
very
wise.
Hot.
Thank God it's moisture wicking. We don't want to talk about this movie at all.
I'm ready to talk about
okay,
this movie.
Okay, go. Tell me about the scene.
Okay, so as you said, we walk into the scene of this dude who's having a pool party, literally.
Gonzalez, the Cuban hitman.
Yeah,
Hector
so
Gonzalez.
Bond is following to see who pays him off, basically. And we see Bond sneaking up. He steps on... Oh, no, someone else steps on a twig.
Yeah. Bond is actually doing espionage.
Yeah, he is.
No.
And then the twig
with
that
no
someone
gadgets.
Else steps on trips him
I think he's
off.
Got binoculars.
Yeah,
that's,
binoculars.
That's the best
and,
he's got.
Yep. So then someone hears the twig, sees Bond, and then Bond gets captured. Oh, no.
Yeah.
So then he's over by the pool getting interrogated or something, and then Gonzalez, what's his name?
Yeah, Gonzalez. Yeah.
Jumps into the pool, gets hit in the back with a crossbow.
Yeah.
Which is pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great shot.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
So I guess see the money exchange hands first, which was hilarious because Gonzalez mm-hmm. like tossed 10 grand to his random pool woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is really the height. I mean, this one and the last one, there's just attractive women scantily clad for no reason.
Yes.
To no end. Like,
to be fair, they're at a pool party. I mean,
yeah.
It kind of makes
there's
sense.
There's one guy and like 50 women just walking around in bikinis.
He's tossing around 10 grand to rent.
I mean, no fair.
I'd be at that pool party.
Which Harold and Kumar movie was it where they were at that bottomless pool party? It reminded me of that.
Which Harold and Kumar movie?
One or two?
The third one, there's a Christmas.
There's yeah,
third,
there was a Christmas.
No, it's there.
Yeah.
I was unaware.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It was with a 3D Christmas with Harold and Kumar.
There's claymation in it.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, like, we have Bambi and Thumper as, like, they're ninja fighters and stuff. Like, this is just weird.
Yeah.
They're just, ew. Because it's also weird because they see one guy who's a spy get arrested and beaten up and interrogated, and then they see their boss get shot and some barely move. They're like, mm-hmm. Oh.
It was like...
And they take the money back. And yeah, so upset.
The dope takes the money back.
The scene where he gets shot in the pool with the arrow sticking out his back, it really was shot like that joke in Caddyshack where everybody's Ooh. Fleeing from the pool mm-hmm. with the candy bar.
Yeah.
And during all the commotion, the dove, who is, I guess, how do we figure out that he's part of this?
What do you mean?
Because, well, we see him...
We see him pay off.
We see him give the money to Gonzalez.
Yep, right.
Mm-hmm. So we're not sure how he factors in with the grand scheme.
Yeah, because Bond was supposed to go and interrogate Gonzalez.
Right.
Right.
But Gonzalez gets shot.
Right.
So then...
Throughout all the mayhem, the dove has just sat there.
Yeah.
And he's not reacting to anything. And
well, he's collecting his money.
Well, when it's over, he collects the money, puts it back in the briefcase, and just walks out.
Yep.
Doesn't say a word. In fact, he never says a word in the entire movie.
Really?
Except when he screams and he dies. That's the only time he speaks.
I guess so. Yeah. Does he not say something to Bond at that point?
He doesn't actually meet Bond.
Yeah, he does.
Up until that point.
Oh, up until that point. Yeah. No,
he
you're
doesn't
correct.
Meet Bond. So he has no speaking lines.
But he's always in the background just scowling, wearing like a big furry hat.
Yes.
So you can kind of check that off the list of just non-speaking henchman guy.
Yeah. I liked him. I thought he was good.
Well, his acting was great.
Better than half the women they cast in these who are like foreign and can't get the lines down. They have to ADR their lines.
Yeah.
Although at least the women in this movie
were good.
And they speak English.
Mm-hmm.
The last one we watched, they were clearly... Brigitte was actually Swedish, so clearly another actress was saying her lines on the ADR. Mm-hmm. Here this worked. They could do that. They pulled it off for once. So here we get a weird scene. Like you said earlier, M is gone.
He's on vacation, I
He's on vacation.
Car chase?
Yes, we do need to do the car chase here, because I was going to skip ahead to the Q scene, but no.
Bond and Melina hook up. Well, they meet up.
Best scene. We forgot the best gag in here. They try to break into his Lotus. Mm-hmm. And what is the security feature? It doesn't honk, it doesn't beep, it just explodes. The guy tries to pull the handle, and then he taps on the glass with the butt of a gun, and it just explodes.
Now, what happens if, like, a stiff breeze blows and you're near the car?
I was thinking of those chaos commercials from the insurance company with like it's winter and a stick falls on the car. I just imagine a crater.
And you were saying this movie was way too straight. There's a car that right. blows up.
You're right.
With henchmen flying.
They'll have fun explaining that recall.
Yeah.
I mean, it's effective.
Yeah. I wish there was a scene where Q was like, "Now, Mr. Bond, did you return the car in one piece?" No, are you kidding me? Well, the security feature is a self-destruct.
Well, even in the Q scene, didn't he make reference to that? Like,
yes,
they're piecing together the Lotus. He's like, "Oh, good, you found it."
And I was actually really pleasantly surprised because I remember this movie really well, and I was like, "What is the security feature for the car?" I don't remember in this one because it says on the window like "protected by so."
Oh yeah, no, yes. It projects a joke coming because it says security enabled.
Like, I want to remember what happens, and then it literally just
blows
up. It's
like the Naked Gun thing. Where,
yeah,
like, it would just kick you in the groin.
Yep. Oh, that was good.
But it does, I guess, point to the fact that they're playing this movie straight.
Yeah,
there are very few of the obvious gags
that
we've had in
like
the past ones.
Big gags, like Moonraker gags. Yeah.
So instead they hump in Malina, or hump in.
Good night,
later.
Everybody.
That's later.
To be fair, I mean, that
there's a Contessa later. That happens in a car. They hop into Melina's Citroen, which is a car that survives somehow.
Is it called that because it looks like a lemon? I mean,
and that's the actual name of the.
It looks like
Citroën. I think
it looks like that car Homer test drives on that episode of The Simpsons when he's going to buy an East European car.
Yes,
can go from 0 to 30 kilometers on a hectare of kerosene. No, wait, I butchered the line, but
it works close enough. Well,
it came across,
but I mean, like. Panels and things are flapping on it, and it rolls over 3 times in this.
I think that was the point because there were shots where it was literally just showing how beat up and shitty the car was. Like,
we were talking. This is really the most practical things get. And this is just a crappy French car rolling down the countryside.
Built to last, I guess.
Ish.
I did like the shot where they're going around the hairpin turns, and then. Henchmen end up in a tree with all of the olive farmers beneath them.
And they're pissed. They're like,
hey, our olives. Oh. In Spanish or something. I mean,
Greek, Spanish, and Italian are used indeterminately throughout this movie. They didn't bother to keep track.
The subtitles didn't keep track either.
No. Other than at one point it said swearing in Albanian, which was great.
I think my favorite subtitle of all time, agreeing in German.
Thanks, subtitles.
Yeah, all right.
So we get back to Q.
We get to M's replacement. And he's like, "Well, 007, you fucked this one up royal." And he goes, "I found out that they were paying the bastard." And then they get really snippy. And so they go to use the only piece of real gadgetry here, the identograph.
Is that a piece of real gadgetry?
1981, it was awesome.
I mean, just a lazy sketch artist.
Yeah, it is, and it takes days.
Because
they start in suits, and by the time they're done, they're like rolling up sleeves. People are bringing them coffee.
Q Branch was like populated with a bunch of people, and yeah, they brought morning coffee.
Q even says, "You can go now. I'll lock up."
Like, I mean, it even starts out with like a cast gag, or like there's a cast that's spring loaded and explodes a mannequin, and then it ends. And frankly, after the first 30 seconds we see to the final shot, they look barely any different.
Yep.
It took 19 hours to figure out octagonal glasses. That was it.
Not square.
No.
Octagonal, I believe, is the preferred pronunciation.
I almost got English down. Oh, man.
But that was a really bad gag, that the Q bumbling through.
I said a sketchy nose, not a banana Q.
Yeah, it was an old man and a computer joke. That was all it was.
Mm-hmm. Maybe which is weird, because Q wasn't really all that old when this was going on.
He was always old.
Do they keep him around just to remind us that someone's older than Roger Moore?
I guess.
Oh, and this is how we actually know why they go to the Alps. So they identify the dude in the picture that Bond pieced together, and it's the Dove. What, did they have the name of the guy?
Locke.
Yeah.
Locke? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he, I guess, worked for Christatos at some point, or worked for the other smuggler.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christatos is in the Alps, in the Italian Alps right now, and we got to send Bond here to go talk to this dude to figure out if we can find this guy, who's this guy's working for, all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's for, you know, again, at this point, it's a movie in which Bond is actually doing spy work, which is kind of neat. You know, the technology is weird, but, you know, computers don't really usually play a part in the Bond movies. This is actually kind of a tossing their cap towards something that, this is what technology is going. This is where we are. And although it's weird considering that Live and Let Die, that flip, you know, where the car goes on the ramp and it kind of does a spiral and lands, was actually the first stunt ever done using a computer.
Man with a Golden Gun.
No. Live and Let Die. You know, where they have J.D. Pepper in the car.
Oh, yes.
And they're driving along and they do the thing in a ramp.
I thought you were talking about the slide whistle.
No. We're not there yet.
Did somebody say J.D. Pepper?
Please, no.
No.
I won't.
But I mean, like, so computers are part
How
of the...
How was that done by a computer?
They did the math. No, like, oh, they actually did the stunt, okay. But to prove that the little car could do it, they actually, it was the first stunt ever programmed on a computer.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
Ergo, like, computers are part of the process, so the fact that they have these giant canisters of computer tape, like, this is reel-to-reel inside of a thing, and Q's hands are, like, shaking or something, so Bond is literally doing the mechanical work.
And Bond, of course, knows how to do all of this.
Of course.
In fact, this is Bond is, like, an asshole, right?
Yes.
Because Q doesn't do the code on the door right, and Bond knows what it is and corrects it. Somehow, he knows secret door codes. This is
the identograph.
I guess he uses it often.
Yeah.
Maybe?
He draws some sexy women on there.
Some wireframe ladies.
Oh, boy. That's Tomorrow Never Dies. That comes later.
I was going to say, he designed the Svedka vodka robot on a CAD drawing. Anyway, so this is why we go to the Alps.
Yes.
I'm glad we sorted that out, because we were questioning
trying to figure out exactly why.
Why did they go there? Because I didn't like the Alps.
Those scenes made no sense.
I loved them. That ski chase was like the best skiing scene in all of Bond.
It's like fitting them into the overall plot.
If you are going to follow a Bond plot, you're going to be sad. So.
I know. This is why I'm just drowning my sorrows, and it doesn't seem to be getting better. And we have Octopussy to come.
Hey now.
Hello.
It may be good.
Phrasing.
We'll
see. Are we done with phrasing? Are we? No.
No.
Is that still a thing?
Yeah, no. So we should get into this. So Bond is going to meet Christatos, who at the time, Ferrara, who's the Luigi Ferraro, because he's Italian, in case you're curious, is MI5's, or MI6's rather, local contact, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, we have this guy who helped us on the smuggling case. He's here on vacation in a chalet. He'll give us some help. And that's Christados,
mm-hmm.
who has his protege, BB, who's a skier, or skater.
Skater.
Ice skater. And so... I don't know how ice skating practice generally works, but people are watching her from restaurant chairs, just applauding as she does everything, and mm-hmm. she's waving to the crowd, and immediately falls in love with Vaughn.
Yep.
Of course. He's old enough to be her grandfather, and so, yeah, of course.
Why not?
That's a young grandfather.
It's still possible.
Yeah, it's still possible. Well, okay, at least an older father.
An older father. That's fine. Yes. I mean, I'm not trying to argue anything here. But...
It sounds like you are.
It would still be really creepy.
She's 29 years younger than the actor, and she's supposed to be playing younger than she actually is by 8 years.
Didn't you say that's where that inspiration for that 15-year-old Archer character...
The first episode of season 2 of Archer, where you have the Austrian girl who's like 14 hitting... Yeah, that's what this is. And it's as creepy in this movie, but played straight as it is in Archer, where it's played for laughs.
I am so glad that Bond was actually creeped out by her, as he should have been. This could have been so weird.
It's not often we see Bond really uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah.
But... Actually, Roger Moore played it off really well.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's in his bed wearing nothing and saying, you know, come on in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like backing off. No, not touching that.
And it was great. He was like, put your clothes on and I'll get you an ice cream.
That's right. Well, no, I mean, because
if she's 12, like.
Well, she was 15.
15, 16.
So. Well, I mean, but like, it's so funny because Bond is supposed to pick her up and take her somewhere for her
protege. Skiing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and he knocks at whatever, 4 o'clock, and she's coming out of the shower in a towel, and then she gets under the sheets and just drops the towel, and you're just like,
I will say, the whole reason I remember that Disney movie was. They showed it in middle school when the teachers didn't feel like teaching that day.
Sure.
And so then the next time the 13 Days of Bond came around, they showed that. It's like, hey, I recognize that girl. And then being a 14-year-old guy during that whole scene, it's like, really? Tell me more about this lost virginity, madam.
Yeah, right. He still thinks I'm a virgin is a street.
That is a line.
And Roger Moore's like, yeah. Roger Moore is very, which again, his emotional range in these movies in general is very small. Here he's like acting his.
There was some acting.
Nope. There was some emotional acting. I mean, when he drops Blofeld in the smokestack, he's laughing.
Yeah, he was chuckling. It was great.
If you guys have seen Black Dynamite, that's what they're making fun of, because he, in a helicopter, drives a guy off of a cliff, and he's just laughing and laughing until the next scene where he walks into the room still laughing. That's what that is.
Roger Moore totally won the game of act that he was playing.
It's the only... Like, those two scenes, he's having fun.
Yes.
He's enjoying it. Oh, he's having fun. Bond actually rejects a woman, which might be the only time in these movies ever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Maybe. Sean Connery was trying to make it with Bambi and Thumper as they were kicking the shit out of him. So, I mean, honestly.
Hey, some guys go for that.
Yeah, I mean
I won't argue. There's places you can pay people to do that now.
Even some of the Bond women that he's assigned to protect or he initially rebuffs, he usually ends up going to sleep with them.
Buffing them.
Yes. He debuffs.
And then rebuffing them.
So we get some cool, I like the scenes in the Alps because I just think they're cool action scenes. Yeah.
Well, and I like Bond in the Alps.
And I really liked, well.
It really works.
Yeah.
So we have to introduce this at least slightly. So they go down, they see Eric von Heidelschnitz, whatever his name is, the Eastern Germany biathlon. Was he?
Yeah, he's a biathlete.
Yeah.
I believe their preferred nomenclature is East German.
Eastern Germapian.
There you go.
What was his actual name? Does anyone know it?
I think it was like Eric von Wolf or something.
So I wasn't too far off.
Sounds right.
Something is German. Wolfgang Amadeus Hitler.
So he's a great shot, as we learn. He does his skiing. He's like a robot and then stops, which that sport is hard as hell.
Yeah.
Like, you have to lower your heart rate, and you just cross-country skied a bunch, which is not easy. So, yeah, he shoots all his five things, and she's like, oh, my God, Eric von Heidelschnitz, you're the best. Let's go get drinks at the finish.
And he completely ignores her.
Yes.
Yes.
As he should, because, again, he's, like, at least 20 years older than
her. East Germans were bred to do that.
Bred.
Mm-hmm.
So they ski off, and then the henchman, who is also the German man, go and chase after Bond.
Locke.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. We get some good stuff.
He kills that Luigi first, right? And then there's the chase, isn't there?
No, that's later, the ice rink.
All right.
Yeah.
That's after the ice rink.
Oh, spoiler warnings. Everybody.
Yeah, no, we'll
Sorry.
Get there.
Yeah.
Well, Bond actually avenges him, which is kind of good.
Yeah. So I guess the highlights, we get the ski jump, which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. The ski chase, which is my favorite ski chase in all of Bond.
Yeah, no, it's a good ski chase. It's definitely good.
I prefer the one in The World Is Not Enough.
I think that one's cheesy with the flying hovercraft.
Again, though, I like Bond just skiing. It's a kind of... It's physicality that I can wrap my mind around.
Yeah.
Like, at the end, Bond free climbs an entire mountain.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah, no, it's just...
But the stunt skier, like, he was a really good skier. You could tell that it looked like Bond knew what he was doing. I liked the pole in between the trees to knock the dude off the bike and, like... I just thought it was a good scene.
Yeah, it looked good. It was very fast-paced, very energetic.
And the cool bobsled run that I guess the stuntman got...
Yeah, who wants to ruin the mood here?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so I'll bring it up. Fine, why not? So at one point, Bond is skiing down the mountain, and then after the ski jump, things go crazy. They're chasing him in various ways. Mm-hmm. You have the biathlete who's trying to ski down the mountain and tumbling over things. You have a couple people on motorcycles.
Yep.
At one point, Bond has knocked down most of the motorcyclists, but they're still being chased by some skiers. So he jumps onto the track of the bobsled, and he's skiing down it.
While it's being used for practice.
While it's being used for practice. And apparently...
No, the dude motorcycles after him on it.
Well, no, but there's also in front of him a bobsled team behind him. And apparently what happens is during one of the runs, things go out of control. And just like, I guess, at the last Winter Olympics as of recording, when those Aussies died on the practice run, the stuntman took the turn too hard, flung off the track and hit a tree, and one of the bobsledders died. Which is the first of two near deaths, because two stuntmen nearly died in the, when they get to the coral reef. This was a pretty aggressive one physically, because also the helicopter goes nuts. You could have convinced me that the helicopter crashed, which it would in a couple of years when they do the Twilight Zone movie.
Oh, that's bad.
No, I mean, but that's just that going to show how dangerous, like, helicopter stunts are, because those kids die.
And I thought the stunts in this one were all really
good. Yeah, they were good.
Really good.
And a lot of great dummy work, just throwing them off a cliff. Like, the Muppet Studios, man, just making flailing corpses.
But, I mean, like you said, and to your point, that during the helicopter scene, you could tell there was a guy on the outside of that helicopter.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was walking along the outside of it while the helicopter was going crazy.
And I don't know how much glue it took to keep the Roger Moore wig on him, but like, man, that thing was flipping around and he was holding onto the side of it like Tom Cruise was at the Mission Impossible 5 or 6 or whatever it was.
Oh, and I guess we did miss the, because did he meet the Greek lady here yet? Was that before or
the
after?
The Contessa?
No. With the flower shop and the motorbikes, because I think that was first.
That's
when he gets back down to the bottom of the mountain.
Yeah. Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
So he goes to the ski village. He meets that's the problem with these plots. Like, this shit is happening, man.
This part of the movie was definitely thrown together a bit just to get certain scenes in.
Yeah. Because she's there because she said she got a telegram from Bond.
Which is not really ever explained.
No. And
well, you assume that the dove wanted to kill her because...
Oh.
For something.
So for Matt, I like this movie. I'll watch it again. It still makes no sense. Yeah. I mean, you can defend it all you want. There are bits of this that are just like, we need this character here, so we're just going to say Bond signaled for her. I like the
idea.
If this was a Daniel Craig one, it would have been a drunk text. Maybe Bond just like, you should be here.
I totally want to see Bond drunk text someone now.
Just flipping pussy galore. Don't call me again.
Moneypenny is getting texts at 2:00 in the morning. Damn it, James.
Actually, it would be harder than you think because how many of them actually survive? Natalia survives. He could be drunk texting Natalia.
Well, a lot of them survive. It's usually the woman right at the end.
Yes.
And then she's never heard from again.
That special agent in China just keeps texting back, new phone, who is this?
anyway. I mean, the only other thing, there's two things that happen left. I don't know what order they happen in, but who cares? We have the Bond ends up watching BB in a skating rink.
Yep.
Because he said he would say goodbye before he leaves. Mm-hmm. And so he's watching her practice, and then she leaves, and Bond doesn't think to, say, leave with her. And he nearly gets killed by a bunch of enforcers from a hockey game.
Yep.
Turns into Slapshot for a minute.
That seems
death by Zamboni.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
it was really bad.
I think it would have been better if they had gone the Deadpool route of him actually killing someone with a Zamboni. Mm-hmm. I'm going to kill you in about 10 minutes.
I mean, frankly, he was already laughing at the beginning with Blofeld. He should have just been chuckling like, drinking his Glühwein the whole time, just like, oh, this is toasty.
And Bond looks so just unstable initially, and then he's kicking the shit out of hockey players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the quickest rebound ever.
I know.
He's besting Olympic athletes during
I don't
that
think ski. Those I don't think those were
they
Olympic.
They were just henchmen. Although I think Eric von Wohl was the only one who's an actual Olympian.
Yeah. But again, he was on the cross country skis. I actually liked that touch because you can't downhill ski on cross-country skis well. It's really tough.
Are we actually praising a Bond film for its realism?
That thing I
liked. Roger Moore Bond film, yes.
And no, I mean, animals double-taked?
They obviously double-took. I won't say a lot of thought into this.
They put thought into it.
But they put thought into it like to make it more realistic. Because that's kind of what they were going with this one, wasn't it? Because
there weren't space lasers.
Yeah, they watched Moonraker and were like, no. Yeah, never again.
Let's pull back just a little bit.
As far as the Moore movies have gone, this one was pretty grounded.
It's probably on par with like From Russia with Love for its very down to earth plot.
Yeah. At least he's doing spy stuff. Like it's an actual spy plot.
And the whole world isn't being held ransom by some megalomaniac with a space laser.
I put on, when we were done watching it, we put on a brief little bit of one of the documentaries, and the first line from the producer was literally, "We wanted to bring Bond back down to Earth after Moonraker."
Because he was in space in Moonraker, so they had to literally bring him down.
Well, and like, I mean, again, it's kind of like, you know, the pendulum always swings from the silly back to the very practical. And I'm not saying that there aren't jokes in this one, you know, to Matt's point, but like, they're not crazy gadgets. Like, even the computer takes a day and a half from an image. Like, there's not, like, the watches don't do anything crazy. You know, the car doesn't.
Speaker watch, that's the only thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a radio.
With a pager.
And it has, like, a digital teletype, you know, like, it's, I mean, the only thing is that Maggie Thatcher thinks Bond is a parrot. I mean,
oh, man.
That was something.
But yeah, I mean, he doesn't actually get any gadgets, does he?
No.
Like, Q doesn't give him anything.
Again, I think
his car blows up.
The ideograph.
Yeah.
Identigraph.
And he's got the watch. I don't think he has any.
He's got his usual gun that Q gives him, but that's...
Walter.
I mean, a gun is a gun.
So we can probably just go to the casino at this point. I don't know what happens between now and the casino.
I have no idea what even happened.
Somehow he goes back to Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Because
he's looking for that smuggler that
Christatos
pointed him at.
Oh, because right. Christatos is going back to Greece, so he has to go to Greece also.
Because Christatos pointed him in the direction of Colombo.
Yes,
yeah, Colombo,
not the detective.
Played by Topol. He's a mononym.
Yeah, yeah. And so I guess they have to discover whether Colombo is involved in some way and how and everything like that.
Yeah.
And we get various back and forth that Columbo is actually listening in on them.
Yep.
As they, you know, figure out what to do.
And before all this, we get our first good casino scene in a long time.
Yeah.
When was the last movie we had a casino scene?
There was one in Man with the Golden Gun, wasn't there?
Well, there's one in Man with the Golden Gun briefly.
Yeah.
And when he goes to, because he's in, and they have baskets. I don't know what the baskets are for.
Yeah, but that was playing some weird, what were they even playing? I don't remember.
Just gamble.
Yeah. They were playing Chinese gamble. I mean.
Let's go play gamble, everyone. I'm buying.
Gamble one or gamble
But when
two,
was the last good, like, classy Baccarat scene?
On Her Majesty's Secret Service, they have a Baccarat scene.
I just liked that we got to see it again.
Before Roger Moore.
Though. Well, and this is, I mean, in the more recent one when he's playing Texas Hold'em, it's kind of like, oh, you know, there should be sweaty Texans here. This guy, they have Bucky at the table.
Bunky?
Bunky, yes, Bunky.
The best gambler. Like,
he has one lazy eye.
By the Contessa, right?
He's being peer pressured into betting more on a hand, even though I have no idea how Baccarat worked.
Corfu.
Okay, so it was Greece. So it was 500,000 drachma?
Probably.
How much is a drachma at this point?
Drachmas even still exist?
Not now.
They're on the Euro.
They're in the Union. Yeah.
But how much is a drachma? I mean, because he's...
Not much.
Okay.
Not
unless they pull a
so he's not dropping a million USD on a hand of baccarat.
No, but it's still probably several $100,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was enough to make him look defeated and for the contestant to walk away.
Yeah. You're sweating, Bunky.
Speaking of which,
that man is always sweating.
Speaking of which, there's a Contessa that just randomly shows up at the gamble table.
Yeah. She's a weird...
She's a strange character.
She's trying to pressure Bunky into gambling, and then when he loses, she just goes over to Bond.
Yeah, and she ends up with Columbo.
Yes.
Because they're eating together, and for whatever reason, he insults her or does something, and she leaves.
I think that was intentional.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was a Columbo, go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just go away.
No, go figure out what Bond is.
Oh, okay. Oh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was trying to make a scene so he would go chase after her.
Because then Bond chases after her and...
They end up at her villa, and
she's not actually a Contessa. She's English.
Mm. Yes.
And she has that beautiful fireplace with the steps to get to it.
Mm-hmm. They're building a...
the recessed living room.
I like how Bond kind of... Well, if it were any other movie, even any other Bond movie, it would have been the woman who is so overcome by Bond that she spills wine, right? But Bond is the one who's like, oh, Contessa, and spills the champagne on the couch.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And apparently she has a fridge filled with oysters.
Champagne and oysters, yes.
Champagne and oysters.
Only. She has two things in that fridge.
No, that's her champagne and oyster fridge.
Oh.
Yes.
Which the champagne gets a bit fishy, but...
Oh. Boo.
I just love that, too, because, like... You wake up first thing in the morning, you just want, like, some cheese for toast or some butter, you know? And you go to grab the butter and...
Goddamn oysters.
There's oysters everywhere already shucked. You're just like, ew, gross. I'm more of a night person, Mr. Bond. Would you like some oysters and champagne, which I just have happened to lying around?
We don't get the champagne name, though. Was it Bollinger? It could have been.
I hope so. Or a Dom 58.
It could have been.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Sean Connery at this point is just kicking himself because he's like, he doesn't even have to do any stunts. He just lies around and is fat. I mean, come on, Roger Moore in that skinny suit or the scuba suit is just
he's looking a little chunky.
Yeah.
So what do we actually learn from the Contessa?
Nothing.
She's the Bond girl that exists to die.
Yeah.
She gets hit by a sand buggy.
And then he gets captured by Columbo. Yes. That's what it is.
Going for a walk Columbo's on the beach, and she gets dune buggied.
Yep.
That was brutal. Head to windshield. That was pretty brutal for a Bond death.
Mm-hmm. And they flip around and go after Bond. Bond barely makes it out himself.
Yes.
This is a violent Bond movie.
Yeah.
And Columbo is supposed to be one of the good guys. He was the false flag.
Yeah.
So why was he doing that?
Well, no, it wasn't Columbo that killed her. He was a secondary dune buggy.
Oh.
No, he came from the water.
I thought...
His guys were...
Oh,
the
water.
Dune buggy in the grassy knoll.
Oh!
Dune buggy in the grassy. That dune buggy was driving back and then it veered to the left.
The spear gun to the back.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the dove... Because the dove was one of the ones...
They had two dune buggies. It was a dove and a henchman of the dove.
Oh, okay. I thought for whatever reason
so many
Columbo.
Dune buggies.
I mean, there's so many moving parts to this.
Yeah.
There were. I think it was mostly to make interesting scenes.
I guess, yeah.
Oh, I mean, I have no complaints, but it's rare that Bond plays people off of each other. You know, again, it's from Rush with Love, where they have to do that. That works.
But we got so he gets captured by Columbo, but I really like the smuggler dynamic, like the two competing Cristados and Columbo. You get a little bit of it, but I would have watched a movie with them.
you just did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but like a Cristados Columbo movie.
Okay. I'll get you next time,
Columbo.
Fine. Just took it a different direction.
But we find out Columbo's a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gives Bond his gun back and says, no, you're being played. Cristados is the one who is looking for this.
And he hired all those people to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we then try to get to the actual wreckage, right? This is when we get to the wreckage with Melina.
Well, we go to the...
We go to the warehouse.
The warehouse with the other mines in it.
Right.
Where... I guess Columbo and his guys siege the place.
Yeah.
They see the dove. The dove runs away. Bond
it confirms that Cristados is the bad guy. He's smuggling raw opium.
Yeah, raw opium.
And I always liked...
that's when all those guys got crushed by those barrels full of opium.
Barrels of opium, yes. So I really... I liked Columbo's weird quirk is that he loves pistachios. So he has his old smuggler's trick of tossing the pistachios out onto the floor to see when they step on them. Yeah. I always really liked that. Yeah. But maybe that's just me.
No, I mean, it's not... Like, how he leans in, he's like, a smuggler's trick. And I'm just like, no. Anyone who's ever seen a spy movie. Though that being said, I don't know much about opium, but I thought it was... poppy seeds? Why is it a goo? It
looks, I think, like it's slightly processed. Like it's processed a little bit.
I don't know what the final form of opium is, but I guess
I thought you smoked it. You don't smoke goo.
Yeah, man, science.
You can smoke some goo. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I just imagine after an episode of Family Double Dare, Mark Summer is just like taking hits off some goo, man. Some serious goo.
I need
goo
that slime, man. Come on.
And he's torn between his OCD and some goo hits.
Well, didn't they say heroin at some point?
He's a heroin dealer, but heroin's also, well, whatever.
No, because Columbo says, I don't deal in heroin. Like, that's the one thing he doesn't do.
Well, I think he's saying it because the other guy deals in heroin.
He deals in pistachio nuts. He makes that very clear.
Can you make heroin out of opium?
Yes.
It is an opiate.
Yeah, it's an opiate.
But anyway, opiates and landmines in the same room are a perfectly good idea.
The little precursor to the underwater robot suit.
Yes, there too. Foreshadowed.
Somehow it survives.
Yes,
Chekhov's robo suit.
Chekhov's.
And then you have boxes of grenade, which Bond throws around. Like, this is actually a siege. It's a good scene. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen this since Ninja showed up, and it works out. And
smuggler battle, always good.
He chases the dove out.
Yeah.
And on top of a mountain where the dove is driving, and Bond is hiking upstairs.
Now, where do tunnels this cool actually exist?
Corfu. Okay. I mean, it must be.
Because, I mean, that was awesome. Like, the serpentine tunnels with the footpaths between them. Mm-hmm. And, like, that was cool. I want to go there.
If I were the dove, I wouldn't drive up. No, it was Albania, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was Albania.
Yeah. No, I it's definitely Corfu for Albania then. Because, like, this place is
it's
Greek.
It's supposed to be Albania.
But, yeah, so they're driving through these little... It's, like, built in. It's actually, like...
Into the mountain.
Into the mountain. It's cool. And Bond... It's running his 55-year-old heart out up these stairs.
There were some extended stair-running scenes, too. Like,
I mean,
he was a stunt double for that.
Probably.
I mean, it was a wide enough shot that you couldn't see who was actually running.
And
up.
It took 4 days.
I just imagine it's like that Monty Python bit where it's just a long shot of Bond running up, and at the end he's just, I'm done.
Well, and it keeps cutting back to him at the same point on the stairs over and over. And then, ballsy shot, he jumps in front of the car, pulls three shots off, only hits him once.
Shoulder, yeah.
Yeah, but he drives into the wall, and then Bond
teeters over the cliff. Yeah.
Now, this is ridiculous. This is so not Bond-like. So, This is Daniel Craig Bond. He's teetering over the cliff, and then Bond takes the dove pin that he took off of Luigi's body. And tosses the dove pin into the car, and the car starts to teeter, and then he kicks the car off the edge. Like, he murders him.
Yeah, just flat out murders
him. He totally should have gone, hey, dove, can you fly?
Why didn't they do that? Oh, I guess they wanted to be serious.
He doesn't really do puns in this. He gets a few off.
He gets
really
some quips out.
In the first act, especially.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is badassery.
That was brutal.
Yeah, no, I'm for it. That was great. But then we have the final siege, right? No.
No, then we go to the
Oh, my God, this movie is so much. Yeah, so we go back
to Corfu. Yeah.
They have to get the ATAC.
If nothing else can be said, there are a lot of good scenery shots in this.
Oh, no. No complaints. It just,
it goes everywhere.
Well, and like John said, it has many more moving parts than I remember. Yeah. Like, it goes at a quick clip, so you don't realize how much plot is happening.
Yeah. They tried to cram in so much stuff from all over the place.
So they show that Bond knows more than anyone because I guess he's a naval commander, so this he should know, but he goes...
True. You know what? I hadn't thought about that. He should actually know the ship things.
Yes.
I don't know how naval he is. I think he's naval because he's
a commander
British.
In the Navy.
Well, and he is MI5, but he's a commander in the British Navy, right? But that might be just
the
division.
You assume at some point he knew how to boat.
Maybe. Well, he knows everything, so I just assume he knows how to boat.
It makes sense
he knows how to drive a sub, apparently.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he shoves the woman out of the way, says, I'm driving, more than once in this movie. But they decide, well, it's a deep dive. It's almost 600 feet. Ergo, you need a mixture of oxygen and helium so you don't get the bends. And sure, why not? You're not going to question him.
Well, no, I'm not. I think it's under that pressure. Just oxygen doesn't work.
No, I think I think at that pressure, the nitrogen bubbles start to form. So that's why you have to mix it with something other than... oxygen.
That's very possible.
But whatever it is, he knows the ratios, apparently. Even though, for whatever reason, they don't have gloves on, which bothered me.
Well, they need to be able to articulate fingers underwater. So,
and so they have to go underwater, him and Melina, to disarm the ATAC. And for whatever reason, Bond wants to retrieve the coating panel.
That really bothered me.
They could have just destroyed it.
And that's eventually what he does. Like, what is the value of bringing it back?
It keeps the movie going.
The third act.
The third act.
Third act.
It was very irritating.
I mean, like, frankly, what they should have done if they wanted the third act is have the bad guys get it, and then Bond have to retrieve it from them.
Exactly.
Which is what happens anyway.
Right. This movie suffers from Bond never being outsmarted. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, Bond should have been a step behind at one point and then has to recover it because asshole from MI5
To be fair, right after this, he's a step behind because they recover it on the boat.
But that's what it is. Like, it would have been better
if they got it and he still went up and there were still bad guys on their boat, that would have been fine.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, the other guy's like, you can't let this fall into the wrong hands.
Yeah.
The KGB is coming to buy it, Bond. Mm-hmm. Fine. Whatever. But regardless, like you said, now this is where we have an underwater fight scene that Thunderball could have learned something from because this is... action.
Yes.
This actually has purpose. Mm-hmm. Bond.
There's tension.
Ticking bomb. Yeah, that was great.
And Jeremy pointed this out. They said this will only allow us underwater for eight minutes. And the scene lasts 7 minutes and 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. So, yay.
I've started doing that after Independence Day where they said the bomb was going to go off for 30 seconds and the scene lasted a minute and 39 seconds.
And scenes that they don't even give you the timeline, but you think, well, for example, Moonraker, they're on a space shuttle, or space station rather, and the space station starts blowing up and it takes 21 minutes for it to completely blow up, and they're in space.
I feel like that really catastrophically just goes in space. Like, things depressurize.
I've seen gravity. Gravity, it happens quickly.
Considering that in Goldfinger, they're on a plane, and he gets sucked out the plane in like a second and a half. Like, he flies to the ship and just fits through a pinhole. You'd think in space it would go faster because there's actually a vacuum.
The one that always bothered me, and I may get this wrong, in Titanic, they're like, the boat's sinking in 20 minutes. It's like an hour and a half.
it actually did take
It took like three hours or so.
Yeah, it took the whole three hours to sink.
I just remember someone saying a line.
Oh, like, no, we got the line off the boat. Nuts.
Yeah. But I'm not.
No, please. You're fine.
So they thought through the logistics of shooting that scene. Hooray for them.
It worked out well. Because that was a tight scene, and I think because it didn't last too long.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, this is John Glenn's first directing job for a Bond movie, and he had been second unit and cinematographer before. And this is a beautifully shot movie. Mm-hmm. And the underwater scenes are colorful. The fake Atlantis they'd apparently discovered looks good. Because apparently Melina's family just discovers Atlantis. Didn't know if you knew that.
When they brush up against the ruins, she has to remind Bond that they're 5,000 years old.
Yeah. And they managed to hit every piece of coral reef in the next scene, which is the second scene where a stuntman nearly dies. Because if you didn't know, coral is essentially like shards of glass. And this is salt water. And this was an actual scene that they filmed. And there's literally blood in the water. If you're watching this film, that's not fake blood. Like, you can see blood clouding.
I think some of it is fake blood.
Some of it is.
Like, but when you see gashes on Bond.
Yeah.
But you see gashes on Roger Moore proxy's back. Like, this is painful.
Which, to their credit, when Roger Moore showed up again, he's got those scars on him.
Yes.
Yeah, and she's treating
him.
It's almost like they had someone keeping track of continuity in this movie.
Where were they in the past?
I mean, you get the feeling that in some of the previous ones, they're just like, Roger's pretty charming. People aren't going to notice this.
He took some hard hits there, but he's fine. Yeah. Granted, he was still walking around, no problem, but
he put his feet right up against that coral. He's walking. He's fine.
Oh, he's barefoot. That made me cringe, man.
Yeah.
He has his feet on coral, tying a piece of rope to a... Oh, no, that's not happening.
The whole reason he's at the coral reef, by the way, is because a Taco Bell dish decides to kill Bond and Melina. So he ties them to a rope and then just takes off. And the whole idea is to drag them through the coral reef and have sharks eat them.
But let their feet go free because it'll be like bait for the sharks.
Yes.
Not so they can swim.
No.
He's very poorly planning this.
Yes.
He's not the best supervillain.
I get the feeling that he heard he got to be a Bond villain, and he's like, Bond villains like sharks. We got this. He didn't think it through, but he's really just like checking off check marks here.
Are there sharks in the Mediterranean?
I'm sure there are some sharks.
Okay.
I
don't know.
Were they even in the Mediterranean at this point?
Is there coral in the Mediterranean?
Yeah, they were.
Is there? I don't know.
Well, so much for
if I've learned from Bond,
we need a map. Right there. Oh, that's only the Americas.
There we go.
There we go.
Because that's all that matters.
Can you see coral on that map?
That coral was in the Cuba. You see their black boat guy that they always get? I had a moment. I bonded. Okay. Yeah. So turns out Christatos is the bad guy.
Dun dun dun.
And Columbo is trying to actually help them. They're trying to figure out where he could have gone. Luckily, Chekhov's parrot says they're in St. Clair.
No, St. Cyrus.
It was a statue, like a
Attack to Saint something. Yeah. Attack to Saint something.
Something.
Saint, who gives a shit?
And then, how lazy is it when they're aided by a parrot? Like, we don't know where to go now. And let's see what this bird has to say.
They could be anywhere. Attack to something. Oh my god.
That bird is very talented. Usually parrots don't pick up like full phrases that quickly.
Mm-hmm. We do get a cue in the field scene here. We didn't get a gadget from him, but wearing a fake beard, he pretends to be Greek Orthodox priest.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does. He
to no effect. To, like, literally...
Yeah, like, why was he there? to say we don't know where it is.
Well, he said there are 400 something others in the...
Yeah.
400 saints.
Whatevers.
Do you know anyone who could have told you? Yes, so much that you didn't need to be in this scene, Q.
But he looked good in a beard.
He did.
For half a second. He immediately takes it off.
Totally should have
Greek Orthodox use confessionals?
Sure, why not?
I don't know.
I mean,
I'm sure they do.
Is anyone taking a list of things we need to wiki after this?
We're going to get a very strongly worded email. No, I mean, like, for whatever reason, people listen to these a lot. So, I mean, write in, I guess, and tell us we're wrong.
If anyone knows.
Oh, we're wrong.
Know, yeah.
Oh, I guarantee it.
Excuse me, this wasn't a Walther PPK this time. It was a Walther PP something else. I'm just like, I'm waiting for these emails because people bother to look into Bond movies for whatever reason. We don't.
Yeah. Let's just say the gun in the opening song was not a Walther. With the really long silencer that she was pole dancing on, not a Walther.
Pole dancing on a silencer.
That wasn't real?
First of all, they're not usually that big.
That's what she said. Are we still doing that?
Some phrasing.
So it turns out Buddy Columbo knows exactly where it is.
Yeah, they're all. Well, that I actually like that. It's the monastery they hid from the Soviets from when they were in the resistance.
That makes
One
would have thought Q would figure that one out. But whatever.
No. He can't remember his combination anymore. Q is a doddering old fool. He's going to be.
And oddly enough, this is 20 years before he actually retires.
Yes, it is. So they decide to Bond is going to free climb up the side of this spire, which makes you wonder how they get up otherwise.
They have a basket.
Yeah. have a basket.
They have a basket.
It's very From Eagle's Dare.
Yes.
That is just, we need to assault this mountaintop fortress. Let's have Bond climb by himself.
Of all the people to send climbing up this...
Like 200-year-old man?
Exactly. Like, I understand the character should be able to do this, but Roger Moore doesn't convince me as a mountain climber.
No, I mean, and the thing is, it's obvious he's the oldest person in this group.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's
and Columbo's a pretty old
guy. You know what
guy.
Was nice, though? They actually used real climbing implements.
Yes.
Yeah.
He used crampons properly. And he used things properly.
Yeah.
And they even did little things, like when the pegs start coming out, he takes his laces off and uses them so he could climb up.
Yeah.
Like... Whoever was doing it knew how to climb.
Whoever their consultants were on this movie, they actually listened to.
Yes.
At least somewhat. I mean, I'm sure not completely, but let's just say in the past, the space consultant, Moonraker, they didn't even talk to him. He was in a box in another room.
He took off his credits right away. And so this is the final siege. It's a weird siege because Bibi and her figure skating coach, Jacoba something, are...
Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yes.
Thank you.
No problem. Yeah. He's a baseball player, I think.
I know. But I think her first name really is Jacoba.
Was it? That sounds wrong.
She's the one that agreed in German, so I liked her.
Yeah. They've decided to leave because he was an asshole and slapped her in the face.
Well, she was
twice.
Being kind of annoying.
I think everyone was just slapping her in the face, actually. I think the second time it was the German guy.
Because, Erich von Schlong did it.
Credited as Von Schlong in the porn version of this, which would be, I guess,
still for her eyes only.
For your thighs only?
There was a parody with an old dwarf cast called For Your Height Only. Or was it all, if it wasn't an old dwarf cast, then it was like the main guy. The main actor was
a
little person.
Okay.
So For Your Height Only exists. It's a movie.
Control save. Cassandra Harris was the other one. Her name was Jacoba Brink. And they're deciding to leave right as Columbo and his men with perms are arriving. Bond free climbs up, and a guy is kicking out his little whatever they're called.
Just
pinions?
Spikes. Pinions.
They're spikes, but pinions maybe. I don't know.
And
I don't climb too much.
Then Bond throws him off the mountain, and he falls screaming yes. to his death, yeah. which
first
no one notices.
Many.
Yeah. That was actually a great death too.
That was a good death.
Again, the dummy works great because they didn't go all limp.
And the body thuds, and they race over to it. It's like, oh, it's not Bond. And
it's okay.
It's it's what was the dude's name? Like Spanakopita or something?
Apostos. Yeah. I mean, I like how you're going for food. I mean, clearly everyone's hungry here.
This is where we find out what's going on. Christos Christos?
Yeah.
He's got the machine. And he's waiting for the Soviet general to come so he can hand it off.
Yep.
So he's selling it to the communists. And Bond has to stop it.
Yeah. And, you know, they've set the stakes that this is the kind of thing that could reveal the location of all the Polaris-class ships. And
then give us a wacky Bond plot for a future movie.
Yes. Which we'll get to. But yeah, so it's fun. It's enjoyable. We're right near the end. It's building up. Bond is trying to find Christos or Christostos.
Christosterone.
Yeah.
Christosterone.
Yeah. I like it.
I mean, yeah.
This actually, once he got up, I thought it started to drag a bit for this whole.
Yeah, I mean,
the
rock climbing thing took a while.
Well, and the guy is kicking out one pin at a time, and you're just like, Bond either needs to kill him or he needs to fall. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. And it does take.
I think it was trying to build tension.
Trying to build tension. It just came at the end of 5 minutes of watching Bond try and climb.
Yeah.
In the first place.
Trying to hork his way up a mountainside.
Well, and frankly, the biggest problem was it took so long that we were trying to figure out who actors were and other things, and we realized that Christostos is Julian Glover, who's the head Nazi in Last Crusade.
Yeah,
Last Crusade.
It was. Yeah. He's the guy that chose poorly.
And
he's the other Nazi, space Nazi, in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, the one driving the AT-AT. Yeah.
Which I think was this same year, wasn't it? 81? 80?
Empire Strikes Back was 80. Okay. So the year before.
Yeah, so apparently if you're at Pinewood Studios, you can end up stumbling into some of the best movies ever made. Now,
henchman, the guy killed on the beach, he was Game of Thrones.
Yes.
He said he was Tywin, right?
Yeah, he was.
Tywin Lannister.
It's a good, it's a good script.
And,
good plot, good actors.
Should I make this joke?
No.
I will not
probably
then.
Not.
You probably could.
Okay, well then much like in Game of Thrones, he also met his fate thanks to an arrow.
Yeah, that's not good for him.
No.
Him and arrows. That's like just what that actor's thing is.
Except there was Sean Bean with just dying for no reason. Yeah. Yeah. We should wrap this up.
Yeah. Well, Bond fights Eric von What's-His-Face.
Yeah.
Kicks him out a window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kicks him through a stained glass window.
Also off the giant spire, which was great, again.
After he also got a slap in on BB, I think.
Yeah. I think we've learned a lesson that Bond should just kick people off of tall things more.
I mean,
he kick people off a Zeppelin in A View to a Kill?
Well, we haven't gotten there yet, so.
Yeah, I mean, but even in the last one, in Moonraker, it's a beautiful shot. He kicks someone through a stained glass window on a clock.
Onto a piano, right?
Yeah, and he goes.
Through a piano.
Through a piano, yes.
The kung fu guy after just a bull in a china shop. That happened.
Yeah. And then Columbo kills Christostos as he's about to hand over the thing.
Yeah, he was going for some sort of weapon. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Molina was going to kill Christostos, but then James was like, no, and then
A scene out of Batman and Robin.
Yes.
Or Batman Forever, right? You don't want to kill Two-Face, kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Columbo throws a knife in his back.
Yep.
Just as Gogol shows up. Gogol, the head of the KGB, who's in like 9 of these movies. Mm-hmm. Reaches for the transmitter device, the translator device. It's a code machine, whatever it is.
Yeah.
He throws it off a cliff and it explodes in the most dramatic. The camera follows it for a minute and a half as it falls down the cliff and then explodes with techno beats.
Yep.
And Gogol just kind of shrugs it off. He's like, you win some, you lose some.
And the great part was Gogol was like, wait, let's see what's going to happen to it.
Yeah. Because literally the guy behind him has a gun trained on Bond. It's like, wait.
Well, I mean, honestly, if I came all that way for this super secret machine, I would do the same thing. Like, if you just threw it off the edge of a cliff, I'd say, well...
And it landed on a little ledge, like, right next to you?
He's Russia. They could pick up the pieces and put it back together.
True.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, détente, Mr. or whatever, détente general. Yeah. There you go. Done.
Then we get one scene left with Bond and Melina and
Maggie Thatcher.
Okay, so at this point, Margaret Thatcher was the new prime minister, relatively new prime minister, a year, 2 years at this point. If you have a woman prime minister for the first time and she's at 10 Downing Street, they've made this joke before. You know, we're patching you into Buckingham Palace, but we don't actually see the queen going, hello, hello. But this time they're like, oh, we're actually seeing inside 10 Downing Street. Like it's a Monty Python sketch. Where would you have a woman if she were, even if she were prime minister? In the kitchen, of course. And so in an apron, Maggie Thatcher is in the kitchen because Bond is misogynistic, even if they're talking about the prime minister.
She does slap Dennis's hand. So that was amusing. That's progress right there, isn't it?
And Maggie Thatcher, who clearly the Broccoli's were supporting at the time.
The actress did a great job. Channeling Maggie Thatcher.
They did a good job. She's talking to a parrot and is convinced as Commander Bond, who said, give us a kiss.
Now, did anyone get the parrot line that confirmed that the parrot was supposed to be Bond? Because it sounded like he just squawked twice and they're like, oh, yes, it's Bond.
No, he actually says, Bond, Bond, Bond.
Oh, okay. But, I missed that.
But no. You didn't miss a damn thing.
Would Bond be saying, Bond, Bond, in a parrot voice?
No. Again, this is the sign that Q should be retiring.
You'd think after the Moonraker thing where I believe he's attempting reentry.
The White House and to...
They would have stopped direct beaming these things to heads of state.
Possibly. Yeah. I'm sure we'll make the mistake a few more times, but...
Oh, 007.
And then that's it. Bond, rather than speaking to Maggie Thatcher, ends up getting naked. And we literally see the robes hit the floor as they wander off. And then the parrot, who also was sick of speaking to Maggie Thatcher, just throws the watch into the water.
Yep.
At least
we didn't get the big show band version of the theme this time.
We did not. So, final thoughts, guys. How'd this one work out for you? I guess we'll end with Matt, since I know he really likes this one. John. Like
this one. This had a lot of... a lot of what I liked about From Russia with Love, that it was down to earth, it was spycraft, it was very Cold War. The Alps, it kind of fell apart for me, but I think it did a lot right. I think From Russia with Love did it better, but this is a good, solid spy movie. I like it.
Thank you. Jeremy?
Could have been 20 minutes shorter.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think there needed to be more of a threat. Like... Throughout the whole time, we didn't see Christatos as a threat. Like, maybe if he had gotten the ATAC and actually fired it once, he would say, oh, shit. But I didn't feel there was any danger.
You didn't think the imposed threat of the Soviets getting it was quite...
Well, then you'd get into, like, the what was the underwater guy?
The Spy Who Loved Me?
The Spy Who Loved Me. Yeah, like, he's going to nuke something. You get into that maniacal villain thing going.
Although,
yeah.
I mean, to Jeremy's point, it's what they do in Goldeneye. They fired off in the middle of nowhere first.
Oh, and that actually, that was really good. So. That,
yeah.
Yeah, maybe they should have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Tested it on something.
So, yeah, 20 minutes shorter and more dangerous.
See, then they would have had to explain what it actually does.
They kind of do.
Well, they kind of do.
But not really. No, I mean, I'm not arguing with you. Because I think the thing is, it's not a weapon. It's something that will decode where the ships actually are.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's what it is. So it's much more like U-571, which is not a good movie either. But, you know, that's what it is.
Well, it could have had two subs crash into each other or something.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
They could have taken the 20 minutes.
So again, Spy Who Loves Me.
Yeah.
Dan.
I thought it... For a Roger Moore movie, it actually held together pretty nicely. I mean, in the past, Roger Moore was more of a cartoon Bond than an actual serious one. I mean, we've looked at two of the worst Bonds already that Moore was a part of, and they didn't hold up well. I thought the first act was far more random than I thought it was initially, but the overall, I thought, came together pretty nicely.
Cool. And Matt.
I mean, I think I really like this one. I've said it already, but this is in my top, I don't know, maybe I'd have to list it out, but definitely top five. I really, really like this one. I think there are a lot of good, interesting scenes. I think that the character that Bond plays in this one is kind of gritty and spy-y, as we've said. Not gritty, but gritty for Roger Moore. yeah, I just really like this one. I don't know if I have that much to say that hasn't been said, so...
No, I was just going to see how long you're going to keep going.
I took a really good movie. I really like this Bond movie. I like this one.
Well, I mean, okay, and just to wrap this up, it's the one where they rein the Roger Moore scripts in the most. And that's not bad. I'm agreeing with you. I think it actually holds together. Because, like, there's not – I mean, we talked for almost 20 minutes in the last one about that scene where his – his gondola turns into a car, and everyone has to have a double take. There's a dog. There's a guy who drops a cigarette because what are in the cigarettes? The wine bottle. Like, it's rough. This one has none of that other than when the skis go through the chalet and the waiter maliciously throws a tray into someone's face.
Yes.
But other than that, like, there are jokes. It would not be a Daniel Craig movie.
No.
It would not be even a Sean Connery. Like, this is not. This and, like, Diamonds Are Forever are about as silly as each other.
Mm-hmm.
But the
Don't
plot.
Don't you dare say a bad word about Diamonds Are Forever.
Oh, no. Diamonds Are Forever is awesome. But, like, it's that level of jokiness. But, like, Pierce could never have pulled this off. No. This is a fun one. I enjoy this movie a lot. I think it holds together very nicely. However, we are out of time. The next Roger Moore one is Octopussy, but this podcast will return with Never Say Never Again. Back to Sean Connery and back to form.
I wonder if they can make it more boring in the underwater scenes.
Oh, I think if there were a drinking game, we'd all die. So tune in next time when we see Never Say Never Again and Sean Connery returns. Thanks, guys.
Mission Briefing and Myopia Defend Your Childhood are produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It's hosted and edited by Nick Hoffman. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is sampled from Monty Norman's James Bond theme. Questions and comments? Please visit myopiapodcast.com/missionbriefing or contact us through myopiamissionbriefing@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @missionbriefing and @myopiapodcast and find us on Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. Want to help us out? Go to myopiapodcast.com/Amazon and purchase stuff like normal. Myopia and Mission Briefing get a piece of the action. James Bond will return in Octopussy.